With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the back to earth with a bump of the podcast. It was nice while it lasted. And I'm joined by the Jose Mourinho-shaped hole of the podcast, Tom Alderson. Can we avoid speaking about him? Who knows? And finally, the silly season of the podcast. The rumours are flying again. It's Tom Woodhead. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I think I'd actually rather be the silly season than be described as an actual hole. So,
and a Jose Mourinho-shaped hole at that.
Well, yeah. I mean, would it be the late period shaven head Jose Mourinho or the early suave suited Jose Mourinho? We'll never know.
And Tom Alderson, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good because I think I'm one of the few Leeds fans that didn't actually watch the Brighton game on Saturday, so I'm still feeling pretty positive. I can just ignore it and pretend it never happened. So I was actually out day drinking in Leeds and had probably a much nicer time. I was going to watch the game back when I got home as well, and I'd looked at Twitter. I was like, nah, fuck that. Not doing that.
There's so many people who said to me, oh, could you send me a copy of the game when we're done? Because I'm not able to watch it today. I think a lot of people were doing similar things. And a lot of them just got in touch with me and were like, yeah, don't bother. Don't want to rewatch that. I've got news written on the running order, but I don't really think there's any news other than transfer rumour news. And we're talking about transfer stuff tomorrow on Orta's List. So if any of you are at a loose end at 8 p.m. tomorrow, Josh did put out a tweet yesterday saying 9 p.m, but it is in fact 8 p.m. So if you are at a loose end at 8 p.m. tomorrow and you want to have a listen to some Q&As about the series we've just run, and I think we'll be talking about some of the players we've been linked to as well before we get to those questions. So if that sounds interesting to you, head over to our YouTube channel, or it should be on Periscope on our Twitter account as well. If you can't make 8 p.m, don't worry, we will be putting out a podcast for version of that as well, or you can rewatch it on YouTube as well. Right, with all of that out of the way, we should talk a little bit about Spurs. So this week I was lucky enough to talk to Nathan Clark, podcast host of The Extra Inch, and this is what he had to say about Spurs. So Nathan, hi, how are you doing?
Not bad. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's been a fun few weeks for Spurs fans, which began with, well, I suppose it sort of semi-began with Jose Mourinho leaving, but not content to make his leaving Spurs be the biggest news, he has announced this morning it will be joining Roma to go and ruin another club. So how are you feeling about that news now that's come out?
I am feeling humoured about that news. I don't know. I mean, like, as much negative coverage as I've given and will continue to give Jose Mourinho, I don't think it's like impossible that he could possibly get anything good out of like a high level club. Of the tropes about Serie A are obviously overplayed as to how defensive it is, but I do think there's a degree to which it does suit him a little bit better than the Premier League. But I don't know, and poor Chris Smalling, poor Henrik Mkhitaryan. But yeah, and of course, from a Spurs perspective, the other thing is that like we waited until we dropped to seventh place so that his compensation would be small. And then he's just gone and joined another club after a couple of weeks anyway, which means that we were We were wasting our time worrying about that. We could have sacked him sooner because, I mean, it's completely unsurprising. Of course, he's just immediately signed a big media deal with TalkSport on The Sun and then, like, 2 days later left that to go join, you know, another European competing club. So, I don't know. It's all very silly. It's the silly world of Jose Mourinho, and it's much more fun to look at from a bigger distance.
I'm led to believe that this means that Spurs won't have to pay more compensation anyway, right? The fact that he's got a contract straight away, is that right?
Well, yeah, exactly. So I think that compensation ends now. So, like, we might as well have just sacked him, you know, several weeks prior, had a few more weeks of Mason going into the cup final or whatever and upset some players a little less. But you never know.
I guess the club will be surprised that he was picked up so readily. I mean, I guess it feels as though it's been a long downward spiral from Jose. So maybe they weren't quite so sure that he was going to get picked up as easily as he ended up getting picked up. But yeah, it's good to see that Spurs are going to get away with that one. Let's talk about the sort of end of the season, because as you've said, you know, Ryan Mason didn't really get a huge amount of time to prep for the final, which wasn't ideal. Obviously, Manchester City, one of the best clubs in the world. So that was a bit of a hiding to nothing really for him. But how are you viewing the end of the season from here? Is it just a chance, do you think, for yourself, the fans, the players, to enjoy a bit of Jose decompression, or do you think there's actually anything important that can come from the next few games?
Well, I think top four is possible. I definitely wouldn't rule it out. I think that is the main thing. You're right, the main thing is, like, he's gone now and we can, like, all come together and heal, and we get to see Dele play and we get to see Bale have a run of games. And, like, if you perform badly in one game, that's okay. You aren't, like, ostracized from the squad for 10 weeks. So yeah, I think it's, and the other thing, and I did tweet about this slightly reluctantly, but, like, even under, you know, Ryan Mason, whose only coaching experience is at academy level, although having said that, Chris Powell is on the scene, and I think that he's probably, like, co-manager, really, and is getting under-named by us and bigger media too. But I think that, like, despite the lack of top-level coaching experience between those two, we're demonstrating that this is a squad who are capable of, like, you know, holding onto the ball for a while, of creating chances from possession, of pressing the opposition high. Okay, not to an incredible level, and you're not going to get that even from a very good coach, you know, in a couple of weeks. But just showing that there is some of that we were able to outplay Sheffield United. And okay, Sheffield United is only Sheffield United, but they're still a Premier League side, and demonstrating that we're capable of dominating other Premier League sides, contrary to the narrative that was existing for the last several months, that means a lot. And I think it makes us much more positive going into next season. It makes it much more optimistic with regards to who we can bring in as manager, because there's no, like, oh, we can't play, you know, modern football, we can't get a modern manager because the squad is so trash kind of thing. And all of that melts away. So, I do think that top four is possible. I do think that having Champions League football would be a big help for next season. But I also think that that the main thing is, like, remembering that we're, like, a decent side with a pretty decent squad with a couple of issues in it.
Yeah, you mentioned European competition. There is a chance of Champions League football, obviously, but I know that you've not enjoyed Europa League in the past, and maybe that was coloured by Jose Mourinho in this season. But how are you feeling about next season? Should you end up in a sort of Europa League spot by the end of the competition?
I'm not a fan of the Europa League. Again, with some distance, it can be interesting seeing some, like, you know, quirky sides in the knockout stages. But as a Spurs fan, I don't particularly enjoy Spurs being in Europa League. Having said that, I think that if you think back to Poch's first couple of seasons, especially his first season, and Europa League for, like, the beginning of a project manager's run, Europa League can be pretty helpful because you've got a bunch of group stage games in which you can play your second choice players, play your new signings, play your youth players, and get them some game time there. So if it's Europa League next season, it's probably not a terrible fit.
I'm sure you're getting inundated with questions like this, but do you have any ideas who the next manager of Spurs is going to be?
Well, it's probably not going to be Ten Hag. It's probably not going to be Nagelsmann. it's definitely not going to be Jose Mourinho. I guess Graham Potter is probably the favourite at the moment. I think that the club fancy Brendan Rodgers, but Brendan Rodgers doesn't fancy leaving Leicester. And perhaps we need to get over that and move on. I don't think it's going to be Rangnick because there's just a big clash of personality between Levy and him. So I don't know. For me, from a distance, Graham Potter is sat there as an option fancied by people in the club. As someone who doesn't have, you know, anything better to do, with all respect to Brighton. So I think that's probably my guess is the most likely, and also probably my preferred pick of what's possible.
Yeah, it's probably not the best thing to talk to Leeds fans about at the moment, the managerial capabilities of Graham Potter, given that he has summarily dismissed us in two occasions this season. But I think he would be a great option for you guys. From Graham Potter to another manager, Ryan Mason. What have you made of Ryan Mason so far, given obviously the caveats regarding sample sizes?
Well, yeah. Well, it's like I was saying earlier, you know, he's got us remembering that we can possess the ball, that we can knit moves together, that we can play creative players at the same time, that we can forgive a player of a bad performance or a bad moment or a bad decision and then carry on making use of their talents. That we can press the opposition high without looking absolutely exhausted, that we don't have to sit on the edge of our own box and eventually one of the defenders misses a header and we concede, and that isn't like, you don't need to be absolutely perfect as a centre-back to be capable of playing in the Premier League because your team can help you out by having the ball and defending that way. So he's done a lot for us without necessarily... I don't mind calling it like good work. I don't mind calling it impressive work because he has, okay, it looks like very sort of basic, we're going to play proactive football stuff. Like here's how you, you know, forming triangles, getting the basics down that way and pressing high in a sort of fairly rough but functional way. So I do think he's done a decent job there. In terms of like long term, like I'm not going to put like a contract down for him. I think that like, and again, it comes down to, like, I don't know how much Powell is doing and how much Ryan Mason is just, like, the friendly, Spurs-friendly face, you know, in front of that. But I would like for him to either return to academy level for a couple more years or to go, like, manage a championship team. And he's a prospective future manager that we keep an eye on as he gets some more experience at a lower level. But, I mean, the only thing... the League Cup final, we didn't just lose, but we also approached pretty annoyingly. But then I guess that is just sort of what playing City is like to a degree. So I'm not too upset with that. The frustration point, and we are literally talking about two games, is the lack of Tanguy and Ndombele. But again, it's whatever because Mason's not going to be here next season. So we don't have to worry about like his future too much. He's just not currently fancied by Ryan Mason, who's otherwise made the decisions that I would have made.
So at this point in the interview, I usually ask what you made of the last game between these two sides. Obviously, this weekend's prospect is going to be quite different to the last time we played when you eased past us 3-0. How do you feel about the prospect of Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds United this time around?
I think it's a slightly more scary one than last time. Again, for all of the negative things I've said about Mourinho's football, for all of the positive things I'm saying about an alternative method to football and what we're seeing a tiny bit of, not a tiny bit of what we're seeing, a sort of beginner's impression of under Ryan Mason. I do think that a low block encounter is probably the better way to play against Leeds, essentially, and that's why we had such an easy time last time around. So it is a slightly scary one because whereas for the rest of the season we have been too reactive to the opposition, I think there's a fairly decent chance that going into this game that we will be too proactive and be too much about us and too much about learning how to pass the ball around in training again, rather than thinking about, hang on, Leeds are actually going to offer us something very different here than what we're used to from other sides, and we need to specifically prepare for the way that they are going to press us and the way that they're going to move the ball.
How then do you expect Ryan Mason to put the team out tactically this time around?
I expect to see a 4-2-3-1. I expect to see a high defensive line and relatively high pressing, in a 4-4-2 kind of shape. I expect us to move the ball relatively slowly out of the back, waiting for opportunities. I expect combination play and smart movement from attacking players.
Last time we talked about the Spurs game, I was quite nervous about how Spurs could potentially cause Leeds a lot of problems by playing quite direct football and sort of naturally pulling apart their man-marking system. That's something we've seen Ole Gunnar Solskjaer do. We saw Frank Lampard do it as well. A couple of managers who aren't particularly well known for their in-depth structural attacking play. And there's been teams this season who've caused us problems in just sort of getting hold of the ball, trying to move it quickly. It probably didn't play out that way last time, as I was thinking it might do. Do you think we might see a little bit more of that under Ryan Mason, given that he hasn't had a huge amount of time to, as you've said, develop more structured attacking play?
Well, I think that's the direction that he's been going so far, is to develop structured play. And I do question how suitable that is to play against Leeds. I mean, I definitely wouldn't rule out the possibility that we'll come into this game with a specified game plan to, shell it long in behind every time we win the ball and disrupt Leeds that way. It just seems a little unlikely based on what we've done and tried to do so far. So I do have some fears coming into this game, but I guess probably I'm at a stage where I'd rather see us try and fail to be a proactive football club than to just do what is necessary to win individual games.
Your fixture against Sheffield United saw Gareth Bale and Dele Alli in the starting 11. Do you think this is how Spurs should have been setting up this season? Obviously, both players weren't always fully fit in that time period, but is this how you would have liked to seen Mourinho setting up Spurs?
Yeah, pretty much. But the Bale fitness one is kind of absurd, right? He took half a season. He took over half a season to get fit, which I forgive him of completely because he's over 30. He's had all of these strings of injuries. He's been out the Real Madrid side. I'd lost patience by sort of December, thinking, well, this guy's not going to get fit. He's not capable of getting match fit anymore, and I'd written him off. He finds match fitness in sort of late January, early February. Hooray, there's a party. We smash Burnley to pieces because we have just three dynamic, super level attacking players in Kane, Son and Bale. And it's okay, maybe Mourinho football is viable if you just have these three absurd attacking players and you don't need to have a plan because you have such great players who can just invent football off the top of the head time and time again. And then Bale puts in a poor performance being an auxiliary right back against Arsenal in the North London derby. And then we never see Bale again. It's just it's absurd. It's completely absurd. How do you... Oh, what a ridiculous situation it is to look back on it now. So yes, I think that we should have been seeing more of Bale. Dele's fitness is more down to him not being played, I think. And so it's just a complete creation of Mourinho's dislike falling out with him. I think there's a case that Bale is a bit of a flat track bully, more now than he was before, and that because of his lack of stamina nowadays, even though that used to be a huge strength from him in the past, because of his lack of sort of maybe defensive discipline as a result of that, that you can't play him against Arsenal, you can't play him against City, or at least you can't start him in those games. And perhaps also quite similarly, because of the intensity that Leeds create games to be at, is that a sentence? maybe you can't play Bale against Leeds. So there's a case maybe that we should be tentative with Bale in this game.
Let's look at the sort of logistics then for Saturday. How are you looking injury wise at the moment?
I think Ben Davies is injured, and that might be it. Lo Celso took a stamp on the head, but I think that shouldn't be a problem for me. I have some worries over Kane's fitness. We are back to the ankle situation trademark, which is that he had an ankle injury. He's played two games then. One of those was the League Cup final, but he looked a little off it against Sheffield United. Maybe, a full week between games is enough rest for him at the moment, but I have some slight concerns that he is playing through a lack of fitness, so that he could play in the Euros, or just because he wants to play every league game that he possibly can anyway and win the Golden Boot and do all those Harry Kane kind of things.
So if I could push you for a potential lineup on Saturday, what would you go with?
Dyer and Alderweireld as the centre-backs, Reguilon and Aurier as the full-backs, Højbjerg probably alongside Lo Celso again, and I imagine that we won't see Ndombele start, but maybe we'll see him come off the bench. Attacking midfield three of Son on the left, Deli through the middle, and probably Bale again to start, and I think that that might be a slight misstep, but probably Bale again to start, because he just got a hat-trick, so how can you bench him? And then we might have to adjust later on, and then Kane up top.
So which players do you think are going to have to perform well if Spurs are to beat Leeds?
Gareth Bale is going to have to, track Stuart Dallas back or whoever it is.
And at the other side of the team sheet, which Leeds players worry you in particular?
Well, I guess Phillips, for his ability to break our pressure. I mean, the thing with Leeds, as you well know, John, with this question, is that it's the collective effort, isn't it? There's not much point of pointing out individuals, because it's a threat that Leeds carry through their system. And the intensity and the pressure and the sort of different way of doing things that is scary about Leeds rather than one bloke.
And I don't ever ask for predictions on this podcast, but I am interested in how you expect the game to go on Saturday. So how do you expect the ebb and flow of the game?
Okay, ebb and flow. I think that Leeds style might sort of scare us a little in the first half, and it'll be a bit ropey for Spurs first half, and then we might sort of settle into it, and Leeds might tire slightly second half, and we'll grab the horns a little late on and try to either make a comeback or get a victory out of a wobbly start.
Well, Nathan, it's always a pleasure to have you on. What's the best way for our listeners to catch what you're putting out about Spurs?
I'm on Twitter at Nathan A. Clark, and the podcast is at The Extra Inch.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So that was Nathan Clark, podcast host of The Extra Inch, and he was talking about Spurs there. Let's kick off, as we always do, by asking what sort of ideas were percolating around in your head when you were listening to Nathan. We'll start with you, Tom Woodhead.
I was just wondering, he mentioned that they press in a 4-4-2 sort of shape, despite playing mostly in a 4-2-3-1, and I just wondered what that means for us in terms of our playing out from the back, and will we have maybe Phillips or whoever's playing in that defensive midfield role dropping in to sort of make a three in possession, or will there be some other kind of scheme that we'll use to get around that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even thought of that. But I guess, yeah, the 4-4-2 was, the 3-3-1-3 was designed to sort of exploit spaces in the 4-4-2. So it makes sense then that we would sort of make that shift. So with the defensive midfielder dropping in between and the two fullbacks pushing up. And so you've got, I guess three at the back and then three in the middle, to sort of able to sit in the spaces between the four, and then push your wide players forward and your striker as well.
I guess the thing that worries me about that is if we were to play the exact same lineup as against Brighton, that neither Roberts nor Click would sort of drop in to the space that Phillips or Cock has vacated to provide that option as well, because I think it's often been a problem when we've had Click playing in that slightly more withdrawn eight position, that he's not dropping deep often enough to take the ball. So I think that could be a potential issue.
Yeah, I think a lot of this depends on how well we progress the ball through our own third. I think part of the problem against Brighton was that we were sort of initiating the first part of our build-up fine. And the issue is that we start losing the ball in the middle third rather than in the deeper third. So it's not as if we necessarily needed the two centre midfielders to be dropping in at this point. The problem is that the two eights are then sort of pushing into wide areas in advanced spaces because they're attempting to help build up in those areas, and Brighton just pressed us to pieces in those spaces. So I guess it will depend on whether or not Spurs are sort of sitting in a mid block and whether or not, again, they are going to press us in wide areas, whether we're going to struggle to progress the ball. But yeah, I haven't actually watched Ryan Mason's Spurs in any sort of indicative game. I did watch the Carabao Cup final, which I don't think was particularly indicative. So I'm not entirely sure what sort of height they're pressing at, which I think maybe we'll come into it quite importantly.
I suppose I wasn't really thinking about the Brighton game specifically, more in general when Clicker's played in that position and we have had the defensive midfielder dropping into the back line. I'm thinking about Burnley, maybe especially. Although were we actually playing a back three in that game?
I think Phillips ended up dropping in, didn't he, in that game as well?
Yeah. So that was a similar sort of situation a lot of the time because I think Click was the deepest midfielder then. And he wasn't coming deep enough in games like that, I guess I'm thinking of, rather than the Brighton game specifically. But we did win that game, I guess, but it wasn't the comfortable victory that we might have liked. So, I mean, I think there are lots of... This game feels like one where we could have a lot of different lineups. It's not one where we can just pick the team very easily, I don't think, because there are so many players who may or may not be injured, and we'll get into all that later, I guess.
I'm always interested in playing against flat midfield twos, though. So if they do sort of press, I guess it'll be Dele Alli pushing forward into the two, and then they have their double pivot of, I guess it's Højbjerg and
Lo Celso, I think.
Oh, Lo Celso, they're playing there at the moment, yeah. So if they're playing those two, and then there is space between the front line of pressure and then the midfield pressure, it will be interesting to see what happens for us, because like you say, in certain games we have seen a sort of fairly flat midfield too, with both players dropping in depending on whose side the ball comes in the build up. So if we see that, then it will be I think it will be we'll be more likely to see us play that way if Phillips drops in between the back two, because you have to have your eights dropping in there. You need to have that the ability to build up in that sort of space that we're talking about, where the pivot is. But we do play a lot of games where we play with a single pivot, and then the single pivot ends up just sort of sitting in space that isn't really guarded by anyone, and they get pulled out a little bit by having to push forward onto the flat two. I guess we saw that against Brighton, to be honest, because Koch was often pushing forward quite a bit and then dropping in defensive phases. So that's certainly something to keep an eye out for. Tom Alderson, what about you? What was going on in your head when you were listening to Nathan?
I was kind of thinking about the sort of the role that Bale has to play in this game, because Nathan picked Bale as his player that needs to play well for Spurs to win, as he'll need to track back. But I think that was still making the assumption that Leeds are this very attacking team, which when you could argue that we're not anymore. And he also mentioned that Bale's a bit of a flat track bully, and I think he scored his hat trick against Sheffield United, and I think his other games that he's done well were Burnley and Crystal Palace. So I was wondering. But my main thought was, like, is Bale starting? Would that be an indicator of how Spurs are going to approach this game? Because, like, does he see us as a team that Spurs need to sort of roll over? Or, and if he starts, is he not as worried about our attacking threat? Or if he drops Bale on the back of a hat-trick, does that mean that he thinks Leeds are going to come out and attack? So I was just wondering what you guys thought about Bale in this game.
Yeah, I put further down in the running order that Nathan seemed quite nervous about Leeds' intensity, and I'm not entirely sure that we're going to be intense in the way that he's talking about. And I think he's thinking that if they try and do, you know, fairly intricate build up and then we come out with a high aggressive press, then it may be the case that we cause them problems. But I don't think that we're intense in that way. I think our pressing now, I do think we do press quite intensely from the front, but I don't think our press is particularly effective at the moment in the front in the forward areas. So I personally think that they should play Bale, because I think Bale is the sort of player who will cause us problems defensively. So I don't know whether or not Ryan Mason will be thinking that way, but Tom, did you have any thoughts on this?
I do think that in general, caretaker managers, especially ones that have been promoted from within the sort of youth setup or something of the club that already existed, they do tend to do the kinds of things that Nathan was talking about, that... you know, let's get back to playing the ball on the floor. Let's, you know, almost like you are coaching a youth team, I guess. Like, you know, let's get the players doing the things that they're naturally good at. Let's keep possession, keep the ball on the deck, that kind of thing. It's a different sort of situation, but it almost reminds me a little bit of when Darren Moore took charge at West Brom a few seasons ago as a caretaker manager. It was a similar sort of thing. They seem to have this sort of, I guess it's an almost like a populist way of managing a football team, in that you want to please the fans, you want to do things that the fans hope, or things that the fans see as good football, whatever that might be for the particular club, and it varies by club. But Tottenham are a team that historically have always played sort of, you know, like champagne football. So I suspect that that's partly why they've gone this way. And obviously, you want to go against the manager that's just been sacked as well. That's always going to be a natural sort of thing. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he does play Bale and tries to. It wouldn't be a good look for him, would it? If he just set up like Mourinho would set up against Leeds, even if that is probably the best way to play against us, or certainly was at the time that they played against us last time. I mean, we could argue that it might not be the best way to play against the current Leeds team, but yeah, I doubt he would sort of want to sully his reputation by playing really pragmatically against a team that's mid-table.
Yeah, I think this game is set up for us to be the more pragmatic of the two, just on the basis of the way things have gone recently. I have absolutely no idea what to expect from Spurs, but I do think that they potentially could cause us quite a few problems, and not because I think that they'll be particularly well drilled. I think they'll be solid, like Nathan said, but they have such good players that I think people maybe slightly underrate because of the Mourinho decline, the inevitable Mourinho decline, that I think, you know, if they get going, I mean, they comfortably rolled us over 3-0 playing Mourinho football, and we just didn't really offer much. So yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how this plays out. It could be another game where we sit sort of deep and try and hit on the break. A lot of that will come down to whether or not we've got Rafinha, I think, whether or not we can be successful in doing that. But in many respects, I sort of see this as being perhaps one of those games more akin to those games earlier on in the season where we were playing against teams like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Manchester United and Frank Lampard's Chelsea. I suspect that it's not going to be like the most technical build-up football, but there'll be an attacking intent. And if they can pull us around by being direct, I think they will cause us problems, which I think is the blueprint for how you beat Spurs. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this in terms of... I don't know, I've got it written down on the running order that there's such an odd prospect at the moment in terms of it's hard to judge how good they were before, and it's hard to judge how good they are now. And probably the reality is they're somewhere in between where we think they may be. But how did you feel about Spurs right now, Tom Woodhead?
It's funny that you said that the players are underrated, and I definitely would agree about... I don't think the forward players are underrated. I think everyone recognises that Son and Kane, and everyone also recognises that Bale can be a world-class player, you know, if he's fit. Or if he's raring to go, but yeah, I think you're probably right that the further back you go in that team, the worse they were being made to look by Mourinho's tactics in a way, especially in the deeper bits of midfield, because they weren't being allowed to do what they were good at in terms of passing the ball and things like that. So yeah, but it's whether they've had enough time, as Nathan was saying, to really get their head around playing that other way or not. And like you, I haven't watched them. I didn't even watch the Carabao Cup final, so I don't think I've literally seen a minute of Ryan Mason's Spurs. So I couldn't really tell you much more than that.
And in terms of underrating, I mean, I think we do rate like Kane and Son and Bale. But I think possibly the way that we kind of value them now is that they, you know, they're sort of players who can just cause things out of nowhere. They're sort of moments players who can just create. And I guess what I think is maybe being undervalued is their ability to be able to sort of fit into that kind of more intelligent system quite quickly and start putting moves together between them. And I think that's what we'll underrate. We're so used to sort of watching teams who have just, I mean, I guess it's the same with Manchester United at the moment, although I think they are starting to cohere a little bit more recently. But when you have so many good players on the pitch, you can't really underrate them, because, you know, you'll get a Bruno Fernandes moment where he'll just score or create out of nothing. Whereas I guess what I'm worried about is Spurs just being able to do some of the tactical things that cause us problems without necessarily us expecting them to do that. I'm really interested to see what happens in this game. And I just have no real way of judging it. But Tom Alderson, do you have anything you wanted to add?
He's only been manager for the last two games, hasn't he? I watched the Carabao Cup final and I watched the Sheffield United match.
There was one before that, I think, against Southampton. They had a game before the Carabao Cup final.
Oh, there was, yeah. Yeah, I watched a bit of that actually, and like, having watched those games, I still don't really have a clue anyway. You can't really, well, the City game, they got absolutely battered 1-0, if that's possible. And then the Sheffield United are Sheffield United, and they just like literally just let them do whatever they want. So I think even if, and again against Southampton, I don't think Kane played, so it's literally impossible to know how good they're going to be and what if they've got any sort of tactics or not, or it's like Tom said, that they're just trying to sort of get back to basics.
Kane as well being played while he's injured, and so there's certain things like that where you just don't really know quite how sharp they're going to be. I mean, Ali hasn't been played for most of the season, so his fitness has been up and down.
He didn't look great against Sheffield United either. I think he did one little skill, and that was all over Twitter, and I was like, he won a corner. That's all he won.
I'm quite interested to see whether, because Mourinho seems to have tried his best to turn Kane into a sort of Cristiano Ronaldo type figure where all he cares about is himself. And Mourinho seemed to think that this would make Kane a better player. And it may well have done or may well not, but I'm interested to see whether Kane stays that way or whether he decides that maybe I shouldn't keep playing when I'm injured all the time just so that I can get the golden boot. Because it does seem that is a recent development in Kane's game. He's always had a lot of injuries, but he used to, when he was injured, just not play for a couple of months, I think. And it seems like now he always seems to be coming back too quickly. Maybe that's not true, and maybe it's just my misreading of the situation from afar, but it seems like he's been playing injured nearly all season.
I find this aspect of his game kind of interesting, but I think this is a fairly standard thing, isn't it? It's players playing with injury. You've got Marcus Rashford as well as a good example of that. And when you add that to the sort of compression of fixtures and the lack of pre-season, etc., then you sort of end up with this melting pot where players have just very much become products rather than workers, right, in that sense. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens with Kane. I guess Ali. It's so hard to read anything in this game. The only thing that I've really got in terms of tactics beyond that was we've talked about them out there. They're out of possession structure, but in possession they'll be playing a 4-2-3-1, which I've put is quite nice for our pressing system. Certainly because, as we said before, it does allow you to locate your defensive midfielder a little bit on the 10. And I think we played fairly well against Manchester United in a defensive sense against a 4-2-3-1. I think the 4-1-4-1 just matches quite nicely against that structure. So I don't think there's anything really that deep to say about that. I don't know if either of you wanted to add anything to that.
I just wonder whether it helps the two players at the 8 just as much as well. Like, you've got, I think more than any other formation, you've almost got the two 8s have a really clearly defined pressing role to do against the 4-2-3-1, because they've just both got one of the two deep men. And it feels like there's less room for doubt and less room for people making the wrong decision in terms of who to pick up, maybe, than against some of the formations.
Let's talk a little bit about the individuals in the system then, because I think we can start being a little bit more clear. I feel as though we've been very ephemeral so far in this podcast, just sort of saying this could be the case and it maybe won't be the case. But there are some certainties. Well, I suppose some certain uncertainties, because two of those uncertainties are Rafinha and Calvin Phillips. I haven't heard anything on either of these two, but from what I picked up from press conferences, both of them have hematomas, which I think is a fancy word for a dead leg. Rafinha has had a dead leg for a while now. I'd be surprised if he wasn't back.
Bielsa did go into quite a bit of detail about the hematoma that Rafinha had in the last press conference, and he was basically saying that it's just one of those things that it could go tomorrow, or it could go in a week, or it could go in 2 weeks. It's really hard to predict. It doesn't follow like any normal kind of it's not like you can give physio to get rid of a hematoma. He was saying, I think it basically just, it will probably go soon, but I can't say that it is going to go soon.
I guess he's been out for a while, so there could be some, maybe some worry about his fitness, but I wouldn't know. I presume he probably has been training, even with a hematoma. I don't know, but certainly doing some fitness stuff. But we've seen a few games now where we haven't had Rafinha and we've struggled creatively. Again, I just don't want to ask sort of basic questions like how much are we going to miss Rafinha, because I think we all know that we'll miss Rafinha. But maybe the question to ask then is like, how do we deal with the lack of Rafinha? So I spent a bit of time yesterday in the video analysis of the Brighton game just looking at two players who were used to replace him, Stuart Dallas in the first half and Jan Pervada in the second. And you know, I guess if you could maybe, I don't know, get a combination of the two players, Jan Pervada and Stuart Dallas, whatever monstrous portmanteau that would be, they might be a bit more effective overall. It feels as though Jan Pervada is very good at the ball carrying stuff, but maybe lacks a little bit of game sense and efficiency. And it feels as though Dallas just doesn't have the skill set really to excel in that position in a Bielsa team. So, Tom Alderson, what do you make of the solution to the lack of Rafinha if he's not playing?
I think I'd prefer a proper winger, sort of like Pervada or Costa. Is Costa injured or have
I think he had a back injury, didn't he?
Yeah, so it'd be Pervada for me. I don't think I'd want to see Dallas on the wing, which is a bit weird considering that it was his best position for years, and now it's probably the last position you'd put him in the team, perhaps. Maybe not centre-back, maybe that would be the second-to-last one. So I'd just put Pervada in, and especially because of the time of year and the fact that we're staying up, I'd rather just give a player like Pervada a go rather than try and put Dallas in.
I think it's, again, something I noted in the video, but we've got a few players who are being forced to play through lack of depth. I think of Tyler Roberts as well as a player who is being played regularly and people are expecting him to have the abilities and as I said before, game sense of a senior pro. And they're being basically asked to develop that on the job as they go. And so I'm always a little bit reticent to sort of be too critical of young players like Pervada and Roberts. But I think a big part of development is getting them into the situations where they can learn how to read the game, how they can read space, how to exploit space. There was a particularly egregious example of Jan Pervada where he did everything right, drifted inside. Click had created a big space in the Brighton centre-back line that Robin Koch was running into, and rather than playing a fairly simple ball into that space, he turned back and went out wide again. It's just little things like that where you want to see that those players developing the ability to recognise the really important parts of games. I think that's one of the hardest things about professional football, is that you obviously have ebbs and flows of like importance, that threat, I guess, is a good way of talking about it. And really good professionals are able to recognise when they're in those really dangerous situations and do the most incisive thing. And I think both Roberts and Pervada are maybe a little bit guilty of not recognising those at the moment. But you need to give them, I guess, time, as you've said, Tom, to be able to read the game, read the things on the pitch as they can. Tom Woodhead, did you want to add anything on the wing issue?
No, I mean, I definitely don't want to see Dallas on the wing again. So I guess I would play Pervada. I guess the only other two things I thought is, it is possible that Costa will be back. I don't know how serious that back injury was. And I'd probably play Costa if it came to it, if he was fit and Rafinha wasn't. And the other thing is, might we look at trying Rodrigo wide right? And I know he looked pretty awful up front in the last game. I might get a lot of stick for that, but I was saying in our group chat that it was shades of Jean-Kevin Augustin in that game. Like, he just looked really, really off the pace. But I do wonder if he could do some of the creative things that Rafinha does coming in off the wing, and possibly his pressing responsibilities would be less intense than when he plays as one of the eights. He would have to track back more, but possibly not press as well, if that makes sense. So I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, when I first watched some clips of him when we signed him, I thought he would be a really good fit for playing that sort of role that Pablo used to play on when he used to play on the right for us. And I don't think many people in the All Stats Out We group agreed with me, but I it would be something I wouldn't mind seeing anyway, especially in the situation we're in now, where we're playing Stuart Dallas or a quite callow and frail looking Poveda on the wing. But that said, I do think there are things to like about Poveda, and you know, if you're not going to play him at the end of the season, when you've got nothing to play for essentially, and there's hardly anyone else to choose, when is he going to play?
I think the thing that complexifies this is the fact that I think people will be more open to having players like Poveda developed if it wasn't very clear that Bielsa is taking every game seriously, and I think that maybe, you know, that sort of maybe makes things a little bit worse in terms of you start getting into the mindset, well, these players then have to be professional from the get-go. And I suppose the flip side to that coin is the fact that when we do play heavily youth sides in cup competitions, it's just an absolute nightmare. And so I suppose that we probably need to find some kind of happy medium, right, between playing a young player but making it very clear that they have to be doing everything well from the start, and then just throwing on all of our youth players and being like, see, they're not good enough, so this is why we don't play them.
I suppose Bielsa's never afraid to make a half-time substitute, so I don't see why you couldn't, for example, have Poveda starting and then maybe coming off at half-time if he's not performing, rather than, you know, the inverse, which is what you has sometimes happened.
Yeah, I guess that's what's so interesting about the fact that Bielsa was happier to move Dallas from the position that he's been playing in well recently and put him out wide rather than start Poveda.
I think that's definitely the most baffling decision that I've ever seen from Bielsa. Like, it's the one that I've disagreed with the most that he's ever made. Putting Bielsa on the wing Dallas on the wing in that game.
I think people have this sort of idea that Bielsa is some kind of paragon of youth development, and I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. I think he is very much take every game seriously, make sure you try and win every game, and I think as a result of that, it becomes very clear about who he trusts and who he doesn't in the youth system. Jamie Shackleton is a clear example of that, right? In that he's, even when he's been given chances that you think that he's going to become a regular, then he just doesn't seem to make it. I did a sort of inverse interview for Nathan for his podcast, and one of the questions that their patrons asked was, what do you make of Jamie Shackleton? And yeah, it was kind of weird to answer that question, because, you know, we've just sort of taken for granted that he won't be played, whereas there are people at other clubs around the country who are aware of his existence and think he's a good player, and they can't understand why he's not being played. So, yeah, I think this is another question for another day, perhaps. But let's talk about Calvin Phillips then. We don't really know what the situation with Phillips is. I suspect Phillips will play. I think it would be unlikely that he would be suffering from a long-term dead leg like Rafinha, but we'll see. If Phillips doesn't play, Robin Koch, were we happy with how he played at the weekend?
I thought he played well, definitely out of position. I thought he looked very good. He was proactive. His positioning was spot on for me. Some of his passing was a bit poor. Like he made, especially when he was under pressure and there were players near him. Some of his short passing was a bit iffy. He is a centre back, and I don't think he's a particularly great passer in general. He's good enough. I'd maybe, you know, put him on a par with Liam Cooper or someone like that in terms of the technical quality of his passing, I guess, rather than anything else. But I think, you know, Bielsa talks about that position as being the third defender, doesn't he? And I think in that sense, Koch is possibly, I think just because he's a bit more assertive than Strauch, I think I possibly do prefer him from the little that I've seen in that position to Strauch.
I think Cooper was suspended, so Strauch wasn't really an option, was he? So that's why. So with Cooper back at the weekend, it'll be interesting to see if it's Strauch who he sees as like the deputy to that role, or if it's Koch that he sees, because he has now got that option to choose between the two.
I suppose that would be a sort of elegant way of Bielsa sidestepping the question of whether he wants to drop Strauch or not for Cooper, would be to bring Cooper back in, but then have Strauch move into midfield.
Yeah.
One thing about Koch's passing, I think, is that it was very clear to me from the game. I think he passed fairly well. I think there's a few poor examples, but those examples were generally because he had to set himself in a way that wasn't comfortable before he hit the ball. So the ball came to him quite quickly and he was under quite a lot of pressure from opposition players. So I wonder, one, whether or not in training he's been under that much pressure, but also two, I think his passing when the ball's controlled in front of him and he's got time to look up and make decisions is pretty good. But I think as soon as you put a player like that under pressure, they suddenly have to use a different skill set that they're not using before, which is, you know, making sure that you're... So there's one example I used in the video where the ball sort of comes back to him from... I think it was from maybe it was Roberts. Roberts gets tackled and just pokes the ball back to him, and Pascal Gross is closing him down quickly. He has a fairly easy pass to Dallas on the one side, and then he has a... In fact, it can't have been Roberts who was tackled because he tried to pass the ball to Roberts. I can't remember. It must have been Click. But the ball comes to him quite quickly. He only has a really short time to make up his mind. And one of the things I noticed is that in terms of the way that he set himself, he couldn't sort his feet out quickly enough. So I just don't think he was anticipating the ball coming towards him so quickly and having to make that decision so quickly. So I think there's little things like that where it's clear that he's not used to playing that kind of position. And so he was just a little bit flat-footed. And I suspect those sorts of things you can kind of iron out in training. But beyond that, I thought he was pretty good. I was pretty pleased with him because I've watched him play midfield quite a bit for Freiburg, and I've also sort of saw him in the under-23s games when he was coming back to fitness, where he was being played there, and I didn't think he looked that great in terms of a lot of the time defensively. He can sometimes look a little bit flappy, leaving his legs in, but I thought his positional reading, as you said, Tom, is really good, and I think that's very important for that position, and I think really important for centre-backs too. And I think he played pretty well as a centre back as well when he dropped in, and I suppose it's funny because you forget that he is a sort of right sided centre back, and we haven't really had much of a chance to look at him since the beginning of the season, and we've had a different type of player who isn't particularly positionally aware as well. So it was quite nice to have that contrast. So yeah, I think I feel in summary, I sort of feel pretty confident now about both our centre back situation, but also our defensive midfield situation. I think we've got options you can play there, and I am sure that we won't end up bringing in another defensive midfielder now, because I think that Bielsa will just say, well, we've got Robin Koch, he can play there. And if Koch is playing, then we've got Pascal Strauch who can play there. So once again, we will...
And Adam Forshaw.
Yeah, we will have plenty of square pegs filling round holes, and everyone will be happy. So...
Mourinho-shaped holes.
Yeah. You did touch there on Pascal Strauch. Liam Cooper obviously is available now after his red card suspension. Tom Alderson, do you think that Cooper's going to be straight back in?
Yeah, I think he'll put Cooper straight back in. Whether that involves Strauch going to midfield or going to the bench, I don't know. But yeah, I think he is still first choice at the moment. I think that the interesting will fit be over the summer, whether long-term... is Strauch that will be like the starting left-sided centre-back next year, or Cooper. But at the moment, I think, as captain as well, I think Cooper will come back in.
Any disagreement with that, Tom?
No, I think I tend to agree. I don't think Cooper's done enough wrong in Bielsa's eyes to deserve not coming back in.
I guess that this then leaves us with the issue of midfield. So if we assume that Dallas is playing there, the other question is, like, are we playing Roberts there? Are we playing Click there, who played... on the weekend as well, who is going to play in that other position? Or is it, I guess it's possible we could play Roberts and Click, but Tom Woodhead, have you got any thoughts on this?
I think it'll probably be Roberts. Click wasn't great against Brighton. He did a few things that remind, you know, one or two things that reminded of the player he can be, but not enough to push his way into the sort of default starting lineup for me.
Yeah, it's remarkable how much of a drop-off there was between Bielsa saying that Click could play for any team in the world and Click very much looking like he couldn't play for Leeds. But yeah, any disagreements on that, Tom?
I think I would go for Tyler Roberts. I would be quite interested to see Rodrigo in Dallas, because I don't think we've seen that yet. But I don't think we will see that. I think it'll be Tyler Roberts.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who seem to think that if you put a good pressing player next to Rodrigo, then it sorts out all the problems, which I don't agree with. I mean, that's assuming that Dallas is a good pressing player, which, I mean, I don't disagree with, but I don't think that he's quite as volumatically pressy as people think that he is. there seems to be this idea that if you have someone who's pressing twice as much as another person, it sort of covers everyone. But I think this is part of the problem with the lead system, is that as soon as you have a weak link, especially at this elite level, that link will get exploited and everything will go through that position, and teams will think about which centre back they can put on that side so that he can get into space and get through. I'm not convinced that Rodrigo's pressing is ever going to sort itself out magically by just putting in an even more pressy player next to him.
The only thing that would make me want to perhaps see Rodrigo in Dallas is if Rafinha is out again, because I think Rodrigo might just give us something that has kind of been missing with Rafinha out, because there just doesn't seem to be any sort of way of creating chances. And I think like Roberts is okay, but I think Rodrigo will just give that, well, he's just that level, he's the level above that, he's like, he's nearer to Rafinha, is he, in the stuff that he can do.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it's interesting that Tom says that we could maybe play Rodrigo as we played Pablo in the second season of Bielsa?
It was most of the first season, wasn't it?
It was the first season, yeah.
And then at the start of the second.
I guess the only difference that you would maybe see is that obviously now we're trying to play a lot more transitionally than we were then. Back then it was sort of, we needed someone who was going to be able to just break down low-lying defences, and it was quite nice having Pablo sort of drifting in, going wide and being able to unpick defences, and it wouldn't be quite the same way. But I don't, whether or not a sort of transitional Rodrigo would work on that side, I don't know. I know that he's played in wide areas historically. He's never played his best football in those areas, but he's certainly not playing anywhere near his best football for us in the attacking midfield role. So it's certainly worth a try. And I think the thing for me is that it's clear that the Rodrigo 9 experiment doesn't work. And then there's only a few games a season where you can play him as the 8. I think where you're sort of playing against sides who are going to be quite open in midfield areas. So why not just try him out on the wide areas, especially in a game like against Brighton where he's on the bench and we're playing Stuart Dallas. Like, what's the worst that can happen? We could have lost that game. Well, we lost it anyway. So, but I'm sure Bielsa doesn't feel that way. So it's certainly worth maybe trying out. But I think we could talk about all of these sort of individual foibles till the cows come home. So let's talk a little bit just more about the general stuff. So who do we think needs to play well against Spurs, Tom Woodhead?
Harrison, I think, especially if we are in a position where Rafinha's out. I think Harrison was not good against Brighton. I've said a few times in the past, I think Harrison tends to look better the more involved he is. I think he's a player that thrives on touching the ball a lot. So hopefully, I mean, who does Spurs play at right back?
Aurier,
yeah. So, I don't know. I just think Harrison's not had many good attacking games for a while, so it'd be nice for him to put in a good attacking performance.
Tom Alderson, how about you?
Whoever ends up playing holding midfield, whether that's Calvin or Cork or Strauch, I think like when we touched on earlier about them pressing in the 4-4-2, they'll have to sort of move about to sort of facilitate the build-up. And the way I think that Spurs are going to just be attacking us for most of the game, so I think they'll have to have a good game defensively as well.
And how do you think the game's going to pan out, Tom?
I just think it's going to be us kind of just sitting deep and trying to hit them on the counter, and I think it's just going to be Spurs attacking us and just sort of like trying to find a way through. And I think eventually that they will find a way through one of like Kane or Son or Bale. If we don't have Rafinha playing, I think we are going to struggle to create anything on the break. So fingers crossed he's playing. But yeah, I think it will be us just trying to hit them on the break and then breaking us down late.
How about you, Tom Woodhead?
I think it would be a bit silly of me to try and offer any kind of informed opinion when I've just talked about how I've never watched Spurs under this current manager. And so I'll go along with what Tom says, and if he's wrong, you can blame him.
Well, there you have it. The All Stars Aren't We Spurs preview. That is a game which is happening. I think it's an early kickoff, isn't it? 12:30 on Saturday.
Yeah.
First of two early kickoffs. We'll be back at some point this weekend with the review, probably on Sunday. If you like what we do and want more of it, then there is the Patreon channel. So do check that out. I've just put a video up looking at some of the tactical stuff from the Brighton game. So that's over www.patreon.com/allstatsaren'twe. I think that brings us to the very end of this podcast. So all there is for me to do is to say thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And we'll see you at the weekend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.